Thank you. Well, it's a privilege to be here. It was wonderful being able to live in the Little Red House. Viti and I still talk about it. He was going to the Nazarene School, and I was driving us back and forth from Corvallis to the school, and we were always late. And so it was not because of him, it was because of me. At that school, you know, you get detentions for being late or misbehave and things like that. So when we get detention, or when he gets detention, the parents have to spend it with them. And so I would tease him and go, "I've never been in the principal's office all of my life, and now that I'm your mother, I'm in the principal's office almost every week." So it was wonderful to be able to move to this Red House and form the relationship and the connection with this church. And so I appreciate your invitation to come and speak about my trip to Cambodia. So I will start from the beginning. As Pastor Dave said, I was born in Cambodia in the 70s. We weren't, there was no birth certificate or anything, no hospital, and so there's no record exactly of when I was born. But I experienced the Khmer Rouge time, and so the Khmer Rouge came to take over Cambodia in 1975, and they were killing off all the people who were educated, the people who looked smart, who was in the higher class. So they were trying to kill off anyone who could be a threat to their desire to take over Cambodia. And in that, there were about 4 million people in Cambodia at that time, and almost a third, which was over 1 million people, were killed. And so how that impacted my family personally was that we were always running from one village to another, trying to find shelter and food. So one night, I remember when I was 5 years old, my dad woke me up in the middle of the night and told us that we were running again. And so he was a fisherman, and my mom worked in the rice field. So he told us to run to this shore during the day when he was a fisherman after his shift. He had hidden a boat in the bush. And so he brought us to that, took the boat out, and we got on the boat and crossed the river to a village called Batnambong. And it's in northern Cambodia. So Batnambong, it's the BA on the very left, west side. Yeah. So we made it there in the morning, and as we were there, the people were kind enough to share with us their food. So it was a communist at that time, and so nothing, whatever you work hard for, you don't get to keep. For an example, my mom was working in the rice field, and I was swollen because I didn't have enough food, and my sister had just passed away from starvation, and she was not going to let another child die because of starvation. So after her shift, she had taken a handful of rice grain, and someone obviously saw her and reported her, and so the soldier came, grabbed her, and took her to tie her up on a hill and left her there to die. So fortunately, the son of a family did that, and then in the evening it was the father who heard about it and went to untie her and let her go, and that's how she survived. So that's one example of nothing. You can work your heart out, but you don't get to keep anything, and the people were starving. But in that one village, they were willing to share with us their food. And so as we were getting our food, you go in lines and they serve you a bowl, a little bit of rice that's enough to sustain you for the evening. And so my dad received what he needed, and so he went outside of the food house. My mom and I and my younger brother, who was about 5-6 months old at that time, we were still in the food house getting our portion, and all of a sudden we heard that the soldiers had come. And so obviously nobody had time to find anybody, so we all had to just pick up whatever we had wherever we were and just fled. And so my dad with my older siblings ran into the rice field. Ran into the rice field. My mom and myself and my younger brother, she basically dragged me, and we ran into the village. And the soldiers were coming after us. However, my dad must have looked back, and he didn't see us running with him. And so he called for my mom to go in his direction, which gave away his position. So, but we couldn't turn back. We had to continue to run into the village. The first house that we came to, we asked the lady of the house if she would help us, and at the risk of her own life, she said yes. For if the soldiers knew that she was helping someone that they were trying to capture, they would surely kill her. So she decided to help us, and I was hidden in a corner in the room. It's a third world country, and so it's just an open room with not much at all. So I was just in a corner. And my mom and my brother were outside in the bushes. So the soldiers came, banged on the door, and said, demanded to know where we were. And so the lady of the house once more risked her life and said, well, she didn't know what they were talking about or who they were looking for. She hasn't seen anyone. So they searched the house anyway. So they didn't find us. And then they left. And so we came out of hiding. And once we gathered back at the food court, the food house that day, we found out that my father had been captured by the Khmer Rouge. And from that, we didn't have much hope that he would survive. We spent a lot of years not knowing that he had lived or died. Not too many people escaped the concentration camp. So my mom she was the head of household now, taking care of two younger children. And she had a difficult time taking care of us. And so she decided to, we heard about the opportunity to go to the border of Thailand in a refugee camp. And so it took us 2 nights and 3 days. We left with nothing except for whatever she could carry on her head, which was a little bit of rice, a little bit of dried fish, and the mosquito net. That's what she carried on her head, and she had my younger brother in her arms, and I just kind of dragged along. During the night, she would keep watch. While I slept, she would keep watch. And if she sensed any danger, she would wake me up, and then we would be on the move again. And we were walking on hot ground without shoes, so we were moving from one tree shade to another. So at that time, you know, my mom, as she talks about that, it's really impact. I mean, it really was difficult time for her. The loss of all her relatives, and then the loss of her country and her home, and moving to a place where she didn't know what's there or who's there. But we made it. After 3 days, we made it to the refugee camp. It was surrounded by a double-wired fence and surrounded by soldiers, and yet it was our safety. It was our shelter. To consider what it seems like a prison, because you can't move in or out, as a shelter, you would have gone through so much to consider that. And we did. So we were in the refugee camp for almost 6 years. While there, we were interviewed. You know, we were waiting for people to sponsor us. And in 1985, we made it the first Christian church in Eastern Oregon, in La Grande, Oregon, sponsored us to bring us to the U.S. And we came in December of 1985. So the weather, we were not used to it. We came from a very climate, very hot, tropical, humid weather too, Eastern Oregon weather. And so at the airport, they said, yes, December. So at the airport, they gave us these big things, and my mom said, what are these things? They said it's coats. We're supposed to put them on, and we go, we didn't know how to do it. The zipper. and then we stayed indoor for a few days. And then the first time that our sponsor family brought us out of the house to the shopping area, and in the parking lot, there were piles and piles of white stuff. And I remember thinking, don't these American people eat salt? It was snow. So we started going to church, to the First Christian Church there, and we didn't know anything about Jesus or about church, but we went because we were thankful for them that brought us to the U.S. And so I remember one Sunday school, I raised my hand. It was my first time to raise my hands and ask a question, because the Sunday school teacher was talking about this man who was so amazing. And so I raised my hand and I said, are you talking about Buddha? And she said, no, she was not. And at that moment, I made a decision to not believe in Jesus, because I'm devoted to Buddha. It was the culture, it was the tradition, it was my identity. And so I rejected Christ at that time. But we continued to come to church, and because we were thankful for them. And so it was not until my sophomore year in college that they said I had to come to that decision about Jesus again. So there was another Cambodian family in La Grande. There were like three families. So my family, another Cambodian family, and then our sponsor that allowed us to stay with them. So the man, there was a man, a Cambodian man, who was interested in me. And so he and his family came to my mom and asked for my hand in marriage. But she did not approve, because she didn't feel like he was the right man for me, and other reasons. Yet he continued to come around while she was at work. I was really naive, and I've not had a father figure, and so I latched on to him. And one thing led to another. I was found pregnant out of wedlock. And it was a difficult time for me. And yet it was a crisis time that allowed me to make a decision about Christ. And so I couldn't turn to my religion because you're Buddhist, you're supposed to do what you can to earn a higher life, the next life, because they believe in reincarnation. And then I couldn't turn to my son's father because he was not the right man or a good man for me, and he told me to have an abortion. He would give me money in order for me to have an abortion, but I knew that this is my son, and I was going to have him. I didn't know the cost of what it'd be to raise a son by yourself, and yet God has been faithful all these years. And I couldn't turn to my mom because once she heard that I was pregnant, she disowned me. After my son was born, her heart was melted, and he's still her favorite. It doesn't matter what I need or want. It's all about him. Yes. So she turned around, and she just loves him. She's been a great support for me and for him as well all these years. And so at that moment, in my hour of need, I turned to the one whom I rejected. I needed his love and his forgiveness, and he was there, willing and able to provide that love and that forgiveness that I needed. And when the time was right, he allowed me to understand that my son was never a curse. He has always been a blessing. And because of that hour of need, I reached out to God, and God showed me that he reached out to Vuti and I and have been taking care of us ever since. And he is now 21 years old. He is 6'1", going on 6'2". Yes. And I tell people that he got his height from his mother. So he is, he's going to be a senior this coming year at Western Oregon. He's studying to be law enforcement, and God has provided so much favor in regards to his schooling and his career. He's now doing an internship at the Corvallis Police Department. Mm-hmm. Okay, one story. He just kind of looked at a few days ago. I was talking with him with another lady that he's staying with a couple from church, and so the mom, myself, and him were talking in front of her house, and I said something, and he looked at me with this like intimidating cop look, and I recognized it, and I went, "Vuti, don't give me that cop look. I'm your mother." and he went, "Oh, it's just like natural." Just he shifted into that look. So I'm very blessed all these years that he's been wonderful, and sometimes when he wants something, he goes, "Mom, you should be thankful for me, because if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't have come to know the Lord." And it's usually when he wants something. After I graduated from college, I heard that God can do anything. And so I was willing. The people were like, "If you give it all to him, he can take you to Africa." And so I'm like, "Okay, I'm ready. I'm willing to go to Africa." Well, he didn't take me to Africa. He took me to work in a Mexican restaurant that I worked when I was in high school, and I hated it. Oh, I hated it. But it was the best place for me to be at that time, because as I was there, God was growing me in the Lord and so much. And also it was a time where he needed to do some healing in my life. And so I was seeking him. The verse in Psalms 139 where it says, he has the days planned out for you even before you were a day old. And I said, okay, I want to know what this plan is. Give me the blueprint and I'm ready. And so it was the first time that I was seeking him by reading the Bible on my own. I've been to church all those years and yet have not spent that individual time with the Lord. So that time I would, in the evening after Vuti went to bed, I would open up the Bible to try to read it. But I didn't understand anything because it was all a mystery to me. And yet the enemy knew how powerful God's word was. As I spent time in his word, he knew what was coming. And so in the evening when I would sit down to read, I would feel this dark presence behind me. And I would be like, oh, I would look back, but I was looking with my physical eye, so I was not able to see what was going on. So I would, but it distracted me enough for me to close the Bible and then went and did something else. And so evening after evening, I would come back to reading the Bible, and the dark presence would come stronger and stronger. And to the point where it was when I was sleeping, this dark presence would come over me, and I was not able to move. I wasn't able to move. I wasn't able to open my eyes. I wasn't able to speak. And so it was quite intense. I asked people to pray for me in the church, and they did. So after 3 months of this battle, I'm like, okay, Jesus, I had one chair that was donated by the church. It was this awful orange chair. And it was the only thing I had in my living room. And so I said, Jesus, you're going to sit here in this chair, and I'm going to sit at your feet. I'm going to read your word. I'm going to pray. I'm going to worship. And so evening after evening, I would find myself at the feet of Jesus reading his word. And I would fall asleep on the chair, waking up at 2 or 3 in the morning with a crooked neck. And so as I was at his feet, I just felt like there's a little bit of light around me. But if I was to take one step, I would be beyond that light and I would be consumed by darkness. And so after a while of that taking place, one Sunday I went to church, and the church, during the service, I just sobbed, and I couldn't stop from sobbing. And so I left the church early, took my son to my mom's house, and then I went to my apartment and just continued to cry. And in my crying, I was asking God, why couldn't my dad be with me? Why couldn't my siblings and my relatives be with me? I would trade places with them if I could. And there was no answer at that time. I just needed to ask my Heavenly Father those questions and to grieve. And I did. And at about 4 o'clock, I was exhausted from crying and from not having eaten anything. I was falling asleep. And in that moment of falling asleep, I saw a vision. And in the vision, I was led to a sanctuary. I was in the back of a sanctuary. And then in front of me was a wooden cross. And I was led from the back of the sanctuary to the wooden cross. And once I got to the cross, I just opened my arms and I said, I've given you everything. Nothing I held back. And then I just fell to my knees. And in that moment, I saw Jesus standing right in front of me. I have never seen him before. I don't know what he looks like. But right there at that moment, I knew that I knew that I knew that it was him standing right in front of me, looking upon me with compassion. And in the presence of the Lord, this dark shadow came from behind me and it was next to me. And it said to Jesus, she's given you everything. She has nothing more I can use. And it left. That night was the most beautiful night of sleep I've ever had. So peaceful. And I dreamt of Luke 10 about Jesus sending the disciples out. And I treasured those words in my heart. And so after that, I was able to understand God's word. I fell in love with his word. I fell in love with him. And the intimate relationship began. And so the journey now, it's been 21 years. Well, Vitti is 21, so it's been 21 years since I've known the Lord. And he has called me to go back to Cambodia. And when the call first came, I did not like it. Not one bit. I've always said yes to the Lord. I just did not know that that yes included going to Cambodia. So, but I was, so the reasons I didn't want to go, I have no reasons to go back. I have no reason to leave the comfort life that I have here in America to go live in a third world country, to go back to a country where I nearly escaped alive. I have my house here, I have my job, I have my son, I have my family, my friends, the list goes on and on about my comfort here in America. And so I felt like I was Jonah when God called, just ran the other direction. And yet God continued to work in my heart. And one evening I was journaling in my room. And I was thinking about Abraham, about how he was blessed to be a blessing. And I'm blessed. I am very blessed. I listed off those blessed reasons of why I can't go back to Cambodia. And yet, he said, I was blessed to be a blessing. And then the part where God told Abraham to go. There's no record about where God was going to call him to go. God just said, go, and he went. That convicted my heart. And so he came back. And so I remember journaling. I said, why would I want to go back to Cambodia? Why would anybody want to go back to Cambodia? They would do anything to be able to come to the U.S. Why am I so backward? So he provide an answer with a question. And he said, why would the King of Kings come to earth to die? Oh, and that just pierced my heart. And he just revealed to me that he is the one who died for them. He is the one who loves them. And that just opened up a connection in my heart about, I've always cared about my people, about my home country. And so I surrendered at that moment, willing to go back. So that was a year ago. Since then, you know, just want to talk a little bit about the cost. Since then, I resigned from my work with the state of Oregon as a social worker. I sold my house. I also just been living on my savings and attend the School of Ministries for preparation to go and serve in Cambodia, saying goodbye to my son. We've never lived in separate household before, and now we've taken that step, and God has been gracious. And I feel like in the story about the woman who came to Jesus with an alabaster oil, and she poured it at his feet, and she cried and washed his feet with her hair. And I feel like my alabaster box, the things that are treasured, that I treasure, that are most valuable to me, I'm just putting them in this alabaster box and bringing them to his feet. And as it says in the scripture, that the house was filled with pleasant aroma, I just pray that his presence, his fragrance would spread, and it would be pleasant and inviting to others that I meet and encounter. So we could never outgive God in regards to my son saying goodbye to him. When he moved out, it was hard, but God was saying that I prepared him for this hour. Whether or not I go to Cambodia, there would be a time when he would have to move out. And so I was willing to just surrender that. And he's living with a wonderful family, and he's moving on in his career, and God has got his hands on myself and on him, and that I'm praying that that hand not move. And in regards to my house, the moment it hit me was when I done everything I can to clean it and do what I needed to just leave it in good shape for the person that's coming after me. Closed the door and on my way to giving the key to the people, and it hit me how I was like, how can you take away my house? I had planned for us to stay here. And yet, God was just telling me that I have a new house now. I'm staying in this house where it's beautiful and in North Corvallis. And I wake up with the sun as the sun is shining through the big tall trees. And I'm very blessed. And then when I get to Cambodia, there will be another house waiting for me. And where God is where my home is. Yeah. And in regards to career, it's been a pleasure, and just preparing for missionary to be able to meet with people. As I'm raising support right now, I'm learning how the relationship that I'm building, the connection that I've needed to have not taken place, because I was so much, when raising your son by yourself, you have to be responsible, you're independent, and all of that. All of that is good, but the downfall is that you become isolated. You're like in this mindset, I can do it, I can do it, I can do it. And so you're not really reaching out to people. And I've been missing out on the relationships with brothers and sisters that that I should have had. And so God is building that up. And I'm very blessed to be able to have the interaction with the people. And I'm just seeing the beauty in the unity that in the body that we can have. And it's wonderful. I really appreciate Pastor Dave talking about unity in the body. So the cost could never... to me, the cost doesn't really matter to me anymore. I would go with the clothes on my back to serve the Lord in Cambodia. What I will be doing in Cambodia, the pastor there, I've been there last summer. I went there for a month. And they are my receiving church. So they're pretty much open to whatever I want to do. So I email them, this is my vision, these are the things that I think I want to be involved in. So that includes being a part of church planting teams. So in Cambodia, it's an open country. People, not only the country is open, but the people's hearts are open. And the amazing thing is that during the Khmer Rouge time, the educated people were the ones to be killed and annihilated. Right now, it is the people that are attending the universities, the people that are well-to-do, that are future leaders of Cambodia that are coming to know the Lord. And off the top 20 fastest growing country, Cambodia is number 9. The pastors and the elders there are really passionate about big vision for Cambodia. Their goal in the last 20 years, they've planted 150 churches all over Cambodia. And their goal is that in 5 years, they would plant 500 churches. And that just goes to show how fast the country is going and how receptive the people are to the gospel. And he is providing the restoration that Cambodia is needed because they are open to the gospel. They are open to him working. And so I'm really excited to be a part of the healing and the restoration that he's doing in Cambodia. And I invite you to be a part of it because some of us are called to go, and I'm going, and some of us are called to be involved in ways of prayer, of encouragement, of financial support if you're able. I have my prayer card back there, and also how to support me if God leads you to do that. So I wanted to just end with a story of what God has, a story of what God has done in preparing me. Let's see, did I share you all with you? Okay, I think I shared that I'll be part of the church planting teams. And New Life Fellowship is my receiving church. They also have like an after school program where they feed the children because you can't really learn on an empty stomach. And so provide food to the poor children and provide them, teach them English. Because once you know English, then the doors are open for you. In Cambodia, the culture is that if you are born into the lower class, you don't really get to rise above it. You're identified and by what you're born into, no matter how hard you work. And so for them to know English will open many doors for their future. But this service is also good, not just for their future, but also their current circumstance, because if you're poor, you could be sold into slavery and things like that. And so it will meet their current need as well as their future need. And they will get to hear the gospel. So with the after school program and also any kind of discipleship with the youths or with the women, because I'm an American or from America, they're gonna put me in already that position of leadership, which will be fine because God has given me the skills to lead with compassion. So those are some of the things that I will do. For the first 6 to 9 months, I will be in the capital city in Phnom Penh, which is the south with the star on it. I will be there getting reacquainted with the culture and with the language. One story about the language. So last summer when I went, people were like, a lot of places that I went, they said, are you Filipino? And I said, well, no, I was born here in Cambodia. And they said, oh, but you don't speak it. And because I wasn't fluent. So I said, well, yeah, but I'm learning, and I've been in America, and that, oh, they understood. And then they tried to comfort me, and they said, yeah, at first you look Cambodian, but then after you started talking, we didn't think so. So that gave me motivation to learn, to be more fluent. So I got more fluent, and I didn't want to just speak fluently. I wanted to read also, so I picked up the Cambodian Bible. And I have to give God praise because when I was in the refugee camp, it was my first opportunity to attend school. And so I was learning how to read and write in Cambodian. We call it Khmer. And I got up to third grade. I haven't finished third grade yet. And then we came here to the U.S. And once I got to the U.S., I couldn't continue because all I knew in English was if people ask, say hello to you, you know how to say hello back. And if they were to ask, how are you? I knew how to say, I'm fine, thank you, and you? And so that's all I knew. That would end the conversation. So I was focused, when we first came, I was focused on studying English and didn't study the Cambodian anymore. And so after 30 years of being in the U.S., I'm picking up the Bible, the most complicated literature that you can pick up to read in Cambodian. And yet, I was able to read some of it, and God grasped some of the concepts. And so only God can do that. And so at the church, I was finding anybody who was willing and able to help me read. So I finally met a lady. We became, like, I mentored her. And so she wanted to read English. And so she read the English Bible, and I read the Cambodian Bible. And she said, you can read Cambodian better than I can read English. And I'm like, okay, that's good. So when I got back to the U.S., I wanted to read the Cambodian Bible, which is displayed out there if you want to see what it looks like. I wanted to read it during my devotion time, and it was so hard. I'm going, God, how is this my devotion time? It's so hard. And yet I continued after a few weeks, the words in the Bible, in my heart language, the stories that I've read over and over again all these years since I've been a Christian, they're now anew and afresh and alive and washing over all the stuff that I receive from my culture that is not of the Lord. And it's been so good to be able to read in my own heart language. So, all right, that's a story. And so I would just like to leave with you a story regarding reconciliation. And so as you can see, I put the article that was in the Gazette Time. God provided favor with that article. I thought that the reporter did an awesome job. I was very happy with it. So in the process of interviewing me for the article, he came and talked with one of my pastors at Calvary. And so the interview took place on a Thursday, and he was asking me about forgiveness. He said, "How have you forgiven those people that have done such terrible things to you?" And so I told him that I have. And then he said, really? How can you forgive those people that have done such terrible things, even beating children against the trees to kill them? So that took me back a little, searched my heart again, and then I came to the same conclusion. In my heart, I have already forgiven them because Christ has forgiven me. People have forgiven me. I must extend the same grace. I cannot live with unforgiveness. I cannot live with bitterness. And so I said, granted, when I meet someone face to face that have done those things, I don't know what my response is going to be or what kind of emotions that will come up, but at this time, I already have forgiven them in my heart. So I was thinking of 5-10 years down the road, maybe he'll bring me to that place of encountering that situation. Well, God's timing is perfect, and it is still a mystery to me. So the interview took place on a Thursday. On a Monday, some of us from school and ministry, including Eli, We went to pass out coffee and donuts to the homeless people in Corvallis. And the first group we came to was this man, homeless man with blue eyes. So he kept staring at me throughout our interaction, and it made me uneasy. And so, and then before we left that group, we asked them if they wanted to, if they wanted prayer. He didn't want prayer. So I came around the bench and laid hands on the people that wanted prayer. And after we prayed, he got up from his seat, and then he came around to where I was. I wasn't sure what he was going to do, and but he wanted to give me a hug. So he's over 6 feet tall, so he basically engulfed me. And so as he was hugging me, he said, "I'm sorry for what I did to you. I did what I was told." And that gave me an idea that he was probably involved during the Vietnam War. And so he, out of the heart, the mouth speaks. So I said, "I forgive you." And so he took those words and went his direction, and our group was getting ready to go to the next group and to give them donuts and coffee to the next group. And I just felt like God was had something more to say to this man. And so I gently called his name, and he came back, and I just looked in his blue eyes and I said, "You are forgiven. Be free from your guilt." And I almost saw tears in his eyes, and he took those words and left. And then we went to our next group. That afternoon when I got home, I was emailing the reporter because of our conversation about forgiveness. And so I emailed him the experience, and then I said, you know, God provided reconciliation. I didn't have to wait years from now. God provided reconciliation right here, right where I live. And then I ended the email with, "I don't know what this homeless man with the blue eyes did in my country and to my people, but perhaps the more important thing is the present need. He needed to say, 'I'm sorry.' I needed to say, 'I forgive you.' And at that moment, both of our needs were met."
Amen. Yeah. Thank you. Maybe just time for two or three questions. Just a couple of questions. How long were you in the refugee camp?
Almost 6 years.
Mm-hmm. So, as Pia mentioned, there is an opportunity if you want to receive emails from her. You can sign up back there. If you you had mentioned that you are still looking for support, you something like $400 or $500 per month is
yes.
still needed.
Yes, still needed. I'm hoping to be able to go in October after I help move Viti to school. So that is still needed. I would appreciate if you could pray and consider.
Yes.
And so, yeah.
And how if people want to support you on a monthly basis, how mm-hmm. would they do that?
So on this card, it has my email at the bottom left or bottom right, depending on how you look at it. So the email here, if you can let me know if you're considering about giving monthly or one time and how much, so that I can put it in my record, in my log, because I need to present that to my church, and I need to have the full support amount. Okay, the full support amount in order for them to approve me to go, because I'm very thankful, even though I feel like, why? I'm very thankful because they're looking out for me as a single woman going to another country And I don't have a lot of family support that would be able to, if I was in a crisis, they just couldn't fork out some money. So anyway, they would really like me to have the full support before I go. If you can email me the amount that God is putting on your heart, then I can put it in my log and provide that log to the church, just letting them know I got it. So, and then at the back here, it says how to partner with me. The person that's handling all the donations for me is Shepherd Staff, and their website is on here, and also how to write a check. If you search for me on the Shepherd Staff website, my account number is 2113. However, search by my name because, well, you can find me by my name.